And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. For Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
The hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophet, a Deep Space Nine podcast, a Two True Freaks presentation. It is not, however, a necessary evil, rather a glorious exploration of the finest of these Star Trek television shows that doesn't star William Shatner. I am Andrew Leyland, and as ever, I am joined by the two podcasting gods of the 2TF network, Mr. Sean Engel and Mr. Paul Spataro. How the hell are you, fellas?
Very well.
I'm fair to middling.
Only fair to middling.
No, I've stepped up to fair to middling.
Well, you've woken up a bit now, have you?
Well. I'm thrilled to have achieved that level of quality.
So where do you come from to get to fair to middling? What is the previous step down, I guess?
Average.
Mid-average.
See, yeah, I guess it's below average because middling would be average.
Yeah, subpar.
So I guess you go from fair to fair to middling.
There you go. I'm glad we're categorizing these things and we're, you know, actually recording them for posterity's sake. So
yeah, categorizing our mediocrity.
That's what we do every 2 weeks, is a categorization of our mediocrity.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Do we have any Star Trek news this week since we recorded last and discussed what Star Trek news there was last time? Has anything broken in the past hour?
No.
And we have an iTunes review from Gene.
Oh, do you want to go ahead and read that?
Is it the same one?
Do you want to go ahead and read that iTunes review, Paul?
I actually don't have iTunes open on my computer, so I don't have...
Okay, well, if you want, I can read this iTunes review we've got from Gene, the podcasting machine. Gene writes in and gives us a 5-star review. It's entitled A Wonderful Look Back. Gene writes in saying, "This is a great way to look back at the best Star Trek show that isn't the original. As opposed to the wagon train, we instead have the Rifleman, and it is an interesting take on things. Join Andrew, Sean, and Paul as they look back at this most underappreciated installment of Star Trek. Very entertaining and informative." Well, thank you, Gene, for writing into the iTunes review thing deal, blah, blah, blah. We would like to have more people write in iTunes reviews, so we're threatening to read Gene's iTunes review every episode until we get at least one more review. So
until
please.
we get an email.
That's true.
We're holding Gene's iTunes review captive.
It'll be repetitively read on the show until we get another one. Then that one will be repetitively read on the show.
So we've kind of ruined the ending as well in the telling him that we don't have any email.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, the nature of the beast, you know, the way we record these, I guess.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that whoever is listening, they're not sitting there and saying, "Oh, there's no email, I'm going to turn it off now."
Oh, I don't know, I would.
I hope that people aren't just tuning in to hear if their email is being read. That would be kind of disheartening, I would think. Here, I'm actually going to go check Gmail really quick and see if we got anything.
they can't actually send us an email if they don't actually listen to the show, so...
Well, yeah, they can. They can just send us, you know, we got those emails from Elena last time about, you know, wanting to meet with us and everything, and...
Oh, yeah, I'd forgot that Elena is the pinnacle by which we judge all other emails.
Well...
I love Elena.
No, well, you got the comfortable deal offer, if memory serves.
I don't even remember. I just remember she said that we received an email where she professed her love.
All right, then, should we discuss necessary evil?
Odo investigates a bizarre murder from his past.
I'm the murderer.
Where Kira is the prime suspect.
There, that's her.
Now he must choose between loyalty...
I have no intention of being a Cardassian agent. Don't push me, Odo.
Sooner or later, you're going to have to choose whose side you're on.
And justice.
Yes, I lied about my alibi. That doesn't make me a killer.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yes, let's do that.
Episode of the second season of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. This one was written by Peter Allen Fields, forever known as the man who created the $7 million man. It's Wild Steve! We've made that joke before, but repetition is funny. It was directed by James L. Conway. Stardate 47282.5, when Pal Ra, a beautiful Bajoran woman who had lived on DS9 during the Cardassian occupation, summons Quark to her home. The Ferengi realize she's interested in something other than discussing old times, although he's not sure what it may be. Pal Ra claims to want a favor, the retrieval of a strong box from the shop she and her husband Vatrick once operated on the promenade. The content, she insists, are purely sentimental. Although certain that there's more to the errand than she's willing to admit, Quark agrees. Returning to the station, Quark and Ron break into the specified location and bring the box to Quark's bar. His curiosity getting the better of him, Quark opens the box and discovers a list of Bajoran names. Sending Ron to retrieve an imager so that he can copy the list, Quark senses that someone else is in the bar. It's a Bajoran named Trasko who informs Quark that Palra suspected the Ferengi would be unable to resist opening the box. Trasko fires his weapon at Quark and exits with the box, leaving Rom to discover the body of his dying brother. While Bashir works frantically to save Quark, Odo questions a reluctant Rom about the robbery and the attack. After Odo accuses Rom of shooting his brother, the Ferengi quickly reveals all the details, including the information about the list of names and the location in which they found the box, once the site of a chemist's shop. The mention of the chemist's shop triggers strong memories in Odo, and he recalls the day the owner of the shop, Palra's husband, was killed. It was also the day he was formally introduced to Gul Dukat, the Cardassian, had wanted Odo to investigate the murder. Knowing that the alternative was the death of innocent Bajorans, Odo had agreed and soon found himself questioning Palra. Palra had informed Odo that her husband was having an affair and suggested that his mistress had killed him in a jealous rage. She pointed the mistress out to Odo, a Bajoran woman named Kira Nerys. As Odo's thoughts return to the present, it becomes clear to him that the assault on Quark is related to that still unsolved murder. Returning to Rom, he urges the Ferengi to recall the names on the list, but Rom can only recall one, something like Chezzo. Odo asks Kira if she recognizes the name, but she says she doesn't, and Odo again reflects upon the past, recalling his initial meeting with Kira. She had denied killing Vatrick. The two of them had only been friends, not lovers, so why would Palra think they were lovers? Odo had become even more suspicious a short time later when he spotted Palra kissing Dukat. That suspicion lingers as Odo's flashback ends, and he goes to Bajor to question Palra, who claims to know nothing about the list of names, nor does she recognize the name Chesso. Odo notes that she recently obtained enough money to pay her overdue power bill, but Palra declines to discuss the source of the money. A short time later, Kira figures out who Chesaro is, or rather was, since he died the previous evening. Sensing a link between his conversation with Palra and the death, Odo takes his investigation further and finds himself thinking about his first meeting with Quark. He recalls that he had forced Quark to admit having accepted a bribe from Kira to say that she was at the bar the night Vatrick was killed. Oda's investigation of Palra provides him with a recreation of the stolen list. Every name on it represents a Bajoran who recently paid Palra a great deal of money. Blackmail seems the likely reason, and wartime collaboration with the Cardassians the likely incentive for that blackmail. He is close to solving the current crime, but the one from the past continues to haunt him, particularly his confrontation with Kira about her location during Vatrick's death. She'd finally admitted to him that she was a member of the Bajoran Underground, and that, on the night of the murder, she'd been sabotaging some equipment on the station. Since that, in itself, was a crime punishable by death by the Cardassians, Odo simply told Dukat that she was innocent of the murder. When Trasko returns to DS9 to finish off Quark, Odo apprehends him. With both Trasko and Palra in custody, and a link between the pair easily established, all the loose ends are tied up, except for the murder of Vatrick. Odo realizes that Kira had lied to him years ago, and that she had killed Vatrick, who had walked in on her while she was trying to find the same list of collaborators that Quark eventually would unearth. The past is behind them, and Odo admits that knowledge of the truth won't affect their friendship, but the two of them wonder if the bond between them will ever be the same again. And that synopsis came from The Deep Space Nine Companion by Terry J. Erdman and Paula M. Block, because we're too lazy to write our own. I will go first, because I just talked a lot. This was fucking fantastic.
Yes.
On every conceivable level, this is Deep Space Nine firing on all cylinders. There's some wonderful pastiche of 40s noir. Odo's even doing a detective-style voiceover. We get good cop, bad cop. Between Odo and Sisko, we get a wonderfully little unseen twist ending that I didn't see coming, even though I'd seen this one before. There's a brilliant Columbo moment where Odo goes to leave and then turns around and goes, just one more thing, which is beautifully played by René Auberjonois on every conceivable level, a brilliant episode. Absolutely marvellous. Dukat's back. There is nothing wrong with this show. We can quit now.
I agree
in principle, but I'm going to back off that slightly in that I thought the show was paced a little poorly. I like the story. I love the noir thing. I love the whole detective story, giving a little bit of Odo's history. I mean, I love all of that, and I don't want to focus too much on the negative, but it's so easy just to say that this is, you know, at its best. I thought it could have used a little bit more of some sort of a subplot in there just to kind of break it up a little bit, that it just felt like it was running long a little bit to me. It felt a little bit too slow paced. And I think maybe breaking up some of the scenes might have helped it a little bit. Maybe that's overly nitpicky, but it almost seemed that the Columbo noir feel of it started to get slightly tiresome to me by the end, and I feel almost sorry to say that, but because there was a lot of great stuff in it. My actual favorite parts of the episode were involving Rom. I loved when he starts screaming and he to save Quark. I thought that was just one of the greatest things. I thought it was hilarious. I love the line, "I've had my eye on you for a long time, Rom. You're not as stupid as you look. I am too." when Odo's trying to hypnotize him and he's seeing his name on the bar, just things like that. I thought Rom really shone in this episode in his small part. But again, like I said, my only criticism is I thought it was paced a little slowly, and I thought it could have used something just to break it up a little bit.
Well, I think that you're kind of giving the idea that it is being broken up. You've got the sort of comedy aspect of Rom wanting to take over the bar because he's thinking that his brother is going to die, you know, sort of mixed with the sort of noirish detective feel that Odo's trying to pull off throughout the show. That is very much an homage to, you know, Peter Falk in the Columbo role. Like Andy pointed out, there's that one scene where he's walking out the door and he turns around and just one more thing. And I was like, that's Columbo. He's pulling that off. And, you know, it's supposedly one of the writers, I can't remember who was one of the writers for this, was a writer on Columbo and did some episodes of that.
Peter Allen Fields has written a number of Columbos.
So it's he obviously was drawing from a lot of things. I think this was a really brilliant episode. I don't know if I say it was as superlative as like Duet, but it's definitely firing in all cylinders. Yeah, we get a little bit more into the origin of Odo. We could talk about how he was sort of a science experiment and kind of just a sort of like a party trick that the Cardassians used to use on Bajor before he became, you know, the sort of constable of the station. There's some interesting ideas of Odo's loyalty. He's working for Dukat, and I'm using air quotes up to the microphone, but technically he's just trying to be a person who's trying to find justice. And I really enjoyed the somewhat ambiguous ending. You know, there's a bit deception between Odo and Kira, and you're kind of left to think, is this going to factor into their relationship? Is this deception that, you know, has been kept from Odo all this time, is that going to affect the way that they deal with each other, or are they going to be able to overlook that and move on? I kind of fall more on Andy's side in thinking this is really a superlative episode.
It's again, I'm being overly critical. It's not that I think it was bad by any stretch of the imagination. I just don't know if I put it up there with my very, very highest.
Well, that's no problem.
It's you know, it's almost criticizing it with faint what is it? You damn faint it with dismissal. Faint praise. Now I'm damning it with faint criticism.
I was listening wholeheartedly. Yeah, I think this one's a brilliant one, but I'm a sucker for noir. And I love the look of Terek Noir. I love that it's very dark and moody, and it always looks like there's mist rolling in over the promenade. I don't know whether they have smoke machines or what.
Yeah, they said that they did put smoke machines in to give it a sort of, you know, because it was supposed to be a mining station. I guess they brought ore to the station and had the Bajorans come in there and sift through the ore or whatever. So that the smoke machines kind of did that, and they did lighting effects, sort of darken the lighting to give it a more obviously noir-like mood.
Yeah, and I just love how it looks under the Cardassians, because it's quite dark and grimy in comparison to Next Gen anyway, but it looks like the Federation installed a couple of lights, because it was even more so under the Cardassian occupation. And Dukat's just magnificently slimy in this episode, as he always is. He's played brilliantly, Mark Alamo. According to memory, Alpha, there was a scene cut where Odo observes that Dukat and Pelra are having an affair, which adds an extra level to his investigation that maybe he's killed the husband then. But that was cut for time, sadly. But I just adored this one. I disagree with Paul. I didn't think this felt like 44 minutes. I could have spent another 45 minutes in the past with Odo and Kira.
Yeah, another way they helped set up the sort of idea of this being a very dark prison-like place to work in was the simple setup of sort of fencing between the people, between the Bajorans and between the Cardassians and the Promenade. The Bajorans had to be on this one side of the fence, and it obviously has, you know, references to like Nazi gulags and stuff like that. So it sells the sort of oppressive nature of the Cardassians on the station.
That's, yeah, I mean, again, it's almost an unfair criticism. It to me, it actually, as much as I enjoy noir, and I do as well, I love movies like The Big Sleep, but it just seemed to move a little slowly to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
Well, no, it's everyone's opinion, and everyone's, you know, opinions are not wrong. Opinions are your personal thing. You know,
opinions that disagree with me are wrong. Let's be fair here.
All right, then. There we go. I guess we are communicating on the internet, so yes, we do have to disagree.
Yeah, now that you've disagreed with me, we can never be friends again.
That's true.
We have to treat this like the internet. Not only do I have an opinion, but I have to not respect anyone else's.
Exactly.
I know there's some brilliant scenes in this. Sisko playing good cop.
Oh yes.
Is wonderful. Because oh, yeah. Armin Shimerman. Ivan Brooks hasn't been in this episode or the last one very much. So giving him one good scene is nice. And I love that he puts his arm around Rom and, you know, Odo's a bit of a hard case. It's a beautiful scene, well played. But I think I agree with Paul totally. Rom is probably the episode's MVP. As good as Nana Vista and Mark Alamo and Renaud Bourgeois are, he stops the episode from teetering over into being completely bleak because his wonderful almost joy at the fact that he may have inherited the bar, but it's at the cost of his brother. And then the bit where, oh, well done, you've just saved Quark. And he goes, oh, good. And then he starts crying again because the bar is not his.
Well, and it's not
he,
only...
He's brilliant in this one. He really is.
It's not only the cry, but it's also that sort of scream that he sort of tried to unleash when he was trying to tackle the person who was going to kill his brother. So
and the
it's,
fact
it
that
was
he's still doing it after the guy's been subdued.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's nice that we can have that sort of balance in the show, that we can have these moments of levity with Rom and his characterization of, you know, just being motivated by profit yet not really knowing how to go about it, contrasted with the sort of dark, noirish detective work that Odo's going through, plus the good cop, bad cop scene with Sisko and Odo and Rom. It all blends together to make a really entertaining episode.
Yeah, there's also a lot of setup for the future as well. This is the first time we really see Terek Noir, and we will have a lot of flashbacks as the series progresses. So again, like we've talked about before, we get an awful lot of what Deep Space Nine will become much more in these early second season episodes than we did in the first season. Again, I think some of the dialogue is wonderfully noir, where they're talking about, he basically has that line, don't leave town, to Kira. And she says something like, well, if I did leave, you'd have the Cardassians stop me. And he says, yes, well, I'm not leaving town. That's a wonderful bit, because it is a play again on the sheriff of the small town. You know, don't leave. You're still a person of interest. But what's interesting about this one is Kira is still lying to him in the present. She knows exactly what's on that list.
Mm-hmm.
The Kira in the present day. And she's nothing really to lose at this point by just coming to him at the beginning of the episode and telling him. But she doesn't. And that really plays into the ambiguity of the ending, where Odo's obviously lost some of his trust in her.
Yep. Well, and also, you know, thinking about the beginning of the episode starts out on a dark and stormy night. It's a typical setup for every noir film, every Philip Marlowe novel. You know, you don't expect this kind of stuff to happen in a science fiction show. They can take these elements of different genres and put them into the show, and it works in this format, and it works in Deep Space Nine, where I don't think on like Voyager or on Next Gen, or even on the original series, that a sort of melding of genres would work that well. And I think it also has to do with, you know, the quality of the character actors here, especially René Auberjonois. He plays a great noirish detective on the likes of, you know, like I said, Philip Marlowe. So there you go.
I loved this one. I genuinely did. And especially when I watched them both back to back, which is why I mixed them up earlier on. the contrast between the two episodes, and this is something I think people who don't watch Star Trek or don't really understand what it is or have an idea of what Star Trek is don't understand. Star Trek can be a completely different show every week. The flexibility of its format means you can do fast, you can do comedy, you can do drama, you can do gritty, you can do realistic, you can do futuristic, all within that same template of what Star Trek is. And like I mentioned in the last show, the fact that we've had three episodes in a row so completely different in tone is just a testament to how good Deep Space Nine starts being from the back half of season one and going forward.
Yeah, I think that this particular series, not to talk the specific episode now, but I think it benefits from the fact that they really, really did have quality writing and quality acting throughout. So they're able to switch genres when they choose to and not have it seem corny in the way it's written or performed. I mean, I did think René Auberjonois in this one really did make an effort to do his voiceovers in the style of the old noir films, and I think it worked in this one. But I could easily see where that would become silly.
Does he do it again? I don't recall Odo ever doing a station log again.
Yeah, I don't think this happens anymore. So if it's just this one episode where it happens, it works, because this is essentially, you know, the Maltese Falcon. This is, you know,
The episode, Armin Shimerman brings back his Humphrey Bogart impression.
Mm-hmm.
Which we've not seen since, was it the pilot episode? That he basically played Humphrey Bogart?
I would say, you know, I'm trying to think back. Yep, but I'd give it to you, sure.
I don't think he's done that since then. So the opening, and that again, that's what I really like about this one. The opening with Quark and Pelra in that very slinky dress, so she's obviously coming on to him because she wants him to do something for her, is it thinks you're going to get another comedic episode like last week, and then all of a sudden it just switches. And that kind of genre switching is something that we've come used to now. Buffy did it all the time, but Deep Space Nine was doing it first.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not conversant on Buffy. I've only seen a few episodes, sadly.
Well, not just Buffy. We're used to shows now doing a teaser that makes you think that the episode is going to go in one way, and then it twists and becomes something else. Castle does it all the time. Magnum did it quite a lot. What you think from the first 8 or 10 minutes of the episode is going to be a comedy episode about Magnum and Higgins will suddenly turn on the murder of a character that you like quite a lot. So genre blending and differing the tone of the episode has been done quite a lot on television since, I think it's probably since the late 70s, early 80s they started really doing it. But the fact that I'm watching this one thinking it's going to be another Quark-like comedy, and then suddenly it becomes this noirish detective story, and they do it without the tones clashing. You don't get whiplash from the fact that this has suddenly become a completely different story. It's brilliantly done. I genuinely adored this one.
So, I mean, you know, it's like our criticism or our conflict on this is, was it like one of the best episodes ever, or was it only really, really good?
You know?
It's almost a silly conflict.
Yeah, I don't think it's as good as Duet, and I don't think it's as good as the show will get, but it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, we had earlier in the call, we had a discussion about the Avengers Age of Ultron movie, and we talked about how we felt about that stacking up next to the other spate of Marvel movies, and, you know, we basically came out that it wasn't as good as, or that initially we didn't think it was as good as Avengers, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it is in any way bad. You know, we're classifying all of these as really good shows. This one just happens to be, when we're delineating negative things about it, it's not saying the show is bad, like, say, Melora or Move Along Home. We're just saying it's not as good as we know the best of Deep Space Nine is going to be.
Hmm. But it's still much better than those episodes. Yeah, it's like you can criticize negative things about Age of Ultron, and we can say, I said in that conversation, I didn't think it was as good a film as the first two, but I still said it was pretty damned entertaining. You can quantify these things, and that's where I'm coming out with this one. Mm-hmm. I think this one is great. I think it's great within itself. I think it's great within the overall tapestry that they're weaving of Deep Space Nine. I think I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And you can enjoy things for different reasons. I'm a big fan of silly, but this is far from silly.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's where the show succeeds, where some of the other Trek spinoffs have failed a little bit when they try to bend the genre, is this one never really went in. They can go to the other genre and be true to it on this show. And again, I think that's a tribute to the writing and the acting. Whereas on the other shows, I think sometimes they almost felt a little self-conscious about trying to bend the genre and didn't do it well. didn't do it, you know, didn't totally dive into it the way they did on this. And maybe I'm belying my own criticism where I said that maybe they needed a subplot, because if they did a subplot, that might have taken away from the tone. So maybe you shouldn't listen to me at all.
No.
Well,
Why am I on the show?
Because we love you. I think as well, as you get Deep Space Nine, we'll do this much more. Deep Space Nine will do a sports episode.
Oh, they'll do, you know, they'll do multiple sports episodes.
Yeah, that's how this show was just willing to throw itself into doing other genres. And this is really the first time they've done crime noir. And they will kind of do it again later. And Odo is very much the hard-boiled private detective. I do wish they'd give him a fedora sometimes, but they never did. And they just, whenever they do it, like Paul said, they throw themselves into it wholeheartedly. And the actors always seem game for it, and they never seem to wink at the audience. They always play it for real. And I do wonder how much of that came from the fact that Deep Space Nine was populated mostly by stage actors.
I think that's probably the main reason why that they're able to shift from genre to genre and allow it to feel natural. It doesn't feel like they're trying to force something. These are people who played various different roles, various different genre roles, and they're able to integrate that into the show that you would think is necessarily supposed to be just sci-fi oriented. They're, because they've got a spate of really talented actors here, they can allow it to be on sometimes comedic. They can allow it on sometimes to be romance. They can allow it sometimes to be crime drama. And because these character actors are so good at it, they can actually pull it off and make you entertained and interested in it.
And how much of it as well do you think that this show is arguably, of all of them, the only true ensemble? You know, Shatner and Nimoy, and to a lesser extent Kelly, dominate the original. And Next Gen did become the Data Worf Picard show at various points. And then Scott Bakula's casting got huge plaudits for Enterprise. And Jerry Ryan gave an interview not long ago where she said Kate Mulgrew made her life a living hell on the set of Voyager because she was the star of the show. But this, you never get the impression from reading interviews with these people that anyone like that was on this set. That it was always an ensemble piece, and it was always for the good of the show. And if Avery Brooks doesn't have something to do this week, well, Avery can have the week off, and he's not overly bothered. He's not going counting lines and saying, why am I not in this more? And I think that benefits this show more than any of the others. It is truly an ensemble piece.
I agree with that totally. I think this is the best ensemble cast of any of the Star Trek series. I don't even think it's open to debate. I don't think it's close.
Also, as well, there isn't a weak link in the ensemble. We've all said before, God, it's a Deanna episode. I mean, certainly with Voyager, I thought most of them were boring. So whenever it was an episode about Harry Kim, it was like, oh, Jesus Christ. But this, there isn't a weak one in this. I love Quark episodes. I love O'Brien episodes. I love Odo episodes and Kira episodes and Dax episodes. But she has not quite got there yet, but he will.
He will, yes. You know, I will admit he has been improving. He's shown a lot, you know, especially the episode where they're dealing with the war orphans and everything, and, you know, Garrick's back in the episode. You know, Bashir actually really shone well in that. Then, of course, it was followed up by Melora, and that just kind of ruined all his goodwill, but there you go.
Yeah, I think I've seen growth in the Bashir character as it's gone on, and I think they've realized that having him be the I'm sorry, I'm trailing off here, but like the way he was originally played on the show, it reminded me of, do you remember on Three's Company when they had the neighbor Larry?
Yeah.
Who was kind of like the playboy. He'd walk around in a smoking jacket, but you always looked at him and thought he was kind of a buffoon. That's the way Bashir was played in the early episodes of this show, as far as I was concerned. And now they're starting to give him a little depth, and they've shied away from that, and you know, they're making him a more sympathetic or relatable character than he had been up to this point.
So is Dax Chrissy, or is Dax Janet? I would say Quark is probably the Jack Tripper character.
Well, I'm thinking Dax is more sexy, so that puts her on the Chrissy side, but she's also more intelligent, so that puts her on the Janet side. She's kind of an amalgam of the best of both.
There you go. Andy's tuned out because Andy didn't watch Three's Company.
I watched it when it was called Man About the House. Yeah, it was called Man About the House. No, there wasn't a British version. You stole our show.
Yes, we know.
Stop. You're always criticizing of stealing stuff, starting with our country.
And we yeah. removed all the U's from the proper English spelling of the word. We get it.
No, what I was trying to do, actually, I hadn't tuned out. I was trying to think if there was a similar character in Man About the House. But I can't think, because the neighbours in Man About the House were George and Mildred, who also got their own spin-off show, and I think they did. Didn't they get a spin-off show in Three's Company as well?
Called The Ropers, yeah.
Yeah, well, George and Mildred Roper, so they didn't, change the name.
Mm-hmm.
Jack
moved out and moved in with his girlfriend, and then her father kept being around.
They sound like we did exactly the same thing. Man About the House begat George and Mildred, which was a spin-off about the neighbours, George and Mildred Roper. And then after Man About the House finished, Robin's Nest carried the story on. Seeing ours, the lead guy was called Robin Tripp. Your guy was...
Jack Tripper.
What's his name? Jack Tripper, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, Thingy or Hooper Man. What's his name?
Blanking
John on the actor's Ritter. Name.
John Ritter. Yes.
Yeah, you are John Ritter. So after Man About the House, we had a sequel show called Robin's Nest. So it sounds like they both did exactly the same thing.
Yeah, well, it's not surprising that we steal from the UK shows. I know most of the a lot of the popular shows, like Friends, was taken from a UK show. Coupling was after Friends.
I think it goes both ways. I think when a show comes up in a different format that they say, hey, that's a clever idea, other people try and steal it.
Yeah,
the worst attempt of that was when they tried to do Fawlty Towers here with B. Arthur starring in it.
Oh.
Yeah, when I think of John Cleese, I think of B. Arthur. Because we did a version of Who's the Boss as well. We did our own version of that just wasn't as good because it didn't have Alyssa Milano in it.
Alyssa Milano.
I was younger then. It was okay to fancy her when I was younger.
It's definitely okay to fancy her now.
I don't know. I think I prefer Melissa Joan Hart now. There's a lot of Melissa and Joey on when I'm at the gym. I don't know why. Don't know who likes Melissa and Joey in the gym. I have never heard a single episode, but it's always on, so I've seen a lot of them.
I know of the show. I have never watched it. That's not a Disney Channel show, is it?
I have no idea.
Wow.
Not got a clue.
Nor do I.
Okay.
And nor do I even want to.
Gotta love a bit of Melissa Joan Hart, dude. Anyway, we're ranking this episode.
Yeah,
of
I think we're good, well and done. So let's go ahead and rank this one.
All right, good man.
Yeah, what do we go up to? Do we go up to five?
Yes,
five the highest. Right, 4.5. It's not quite as good as Duet. And the show will become more expansive as it goes along and fleshes out the Terret Noir stuff, but I thoroughly enjoyed watching this one.
Okay, Paul?
I'm going to go with a 4.
Yes!
I think it was a good episode. It was an enjoyable episode. I liked the noir thing. Again, I had some issues with the pacing, but I'll tell you, over the course of this conversation, and I told you I would always let you know if this happened, I went from a 3.5 to a 4 based on some of the points that you guys made that I agree with.
Oh, cool. I'm going to have to go same with Andy. I'm going to give this a 4.5 as well. It's not as good as Duet. So far, that has been the best episode we've seen so far, but I know there is going to be episodes that are even greater than this, and they all kind of build from this. This is sort of the framework that these spectacular episodes we're going to see in the future all come from. The idea of this sort of dark, seedy place that Terret Noir is, the relationship between Odo and Kira, the sort of convoluted nature of things, the ability for them to have multiple genres, to have sort of a comedic bit as well as a dark drama bit intertwined in the show and work together well. This is a good stepping stone for where we're going to be seeing the show progress to. And yeah, I think a 4.5 is completely accurate. Now, unfortunately, I don't think we had a Morn citing this out. I looked all throughout the show. I was scanning the background. I didn't see him anywhere. Did anyone see him in the show?
Went back and looked over scenes trying to find him and could not.
Okay, so sadly,
I didn't see him, but I blended these two episodes together in my head.
Okay, well, like we mentioned earlier in the show, we are sadly short on emails, so we're gonna skip emails this time. If you'd like to write into the show, the email address is listentotheprophets@gmail.com. Write into the show.
Yes, we're not skipping emails. We would have to make them up if we wanted to have them.
Okay. Which, yeah, we should be
Stan Lee. We have an email here from young Andy Leyland that says, this is the best show ever.
Paul Spataro has written into the show.
No, it's not Paul Spataro. It's Saul Pataro. Saul Pataro.
Saul.
Please write into the show, listentotheprophets@gmail.com. We will read your emails on the episode. We'd love to hear from you folks. We're begging. And don't make us read Gene's iTunes review again, because we need more iTunes reviews. Alright, Andy, do you know what we're doing next time out?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, Commander Sisko falls in love. Oh, how sweet. Yeah, this one isn't ringing any bells at all.
Yeah,
I mean, I must have watched it, but all right, we'll view it with an open mind.
Exactly, as we try and do with all of them. Okay, well, thanks everyone for downloading and listening. We'll catch you next time.
Take it easy, everybody.
Goodbye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Producer's work is never done.
It's hard being one of the greatest podcasters on the network, isn't it?
It, you know what? It's a burden that I carry
very well.
It's I feel like I if I can give joy to all of you little people, then...
we little people appreciate your sacrifices.
Yeah.
Okay. I think last week's was particularly good, for what it's worth, for patting myself on the back, which I should never do. But
I had the two
guys from CGS on.
Yeah. Those guys are incredibly polite. I mean, my God, I'm serious.
Is this like Top Gear?
No.
When James May did an episode of Top Gear with the American host, he was shocked by how helpful they were.
Well, yeah, because I watched the British Top Gear, and they're always trying to, you know, pester each other and cause each other consternation and pain.
Rob each other off the road.
Yes.
That's more like me and Bill.
So do you think that, you know, since Clarkson's gone, do you think they're going to cancel the show? Do you think they'll get, or are you?
There's too much money involved in Top Gear for them to cancel the show.
Okay.
It's the second best selling show that the BBC have around the world. It's the second best in terms of merchandise and revenue that they have. I think they'll basically just make the Stig more of an icon of the show and they'll just bring in three new hosts.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
Or maybe do two hosts. The show doesn't need three hosts. They'll rethink the format of it because they're going to have to, because Clarkson wrote a lot of it as well. But I think that's what they'll do, and the show will, it'll either tank, or in 5 years' time, we'll be going, who was Jeremy Clarkson again?
Yep.
And Quark gets killed. So that was quite surprising. Because he is, for all intents and purposes, he does die. And then Dr. Bashir does his wacky stuff and manages to bring him back to life. Rom's brilliant in this
one. Wait, are we thinking of the next episode?
I think you're unnecessary evil now.
Am I mixing them up because I watched them back to back?
Yes, I am. Unnecessary evil.
I was going to say, didn't remember Rom dying in this.
It's, anybody listening, just save that thought for the next
yeah, episode. Yeah, save that for the next one because I watched them both back to back. I'm mixing the two episodes up. Oh, you know, that's what I get for watching them late at night.